Let's get back to this patient, because we talked before about the fact that in patients clearly perimenopausal, most common therapy is going to be 5 years of tamoxifen. And as we talked about their trials, looking at ovarian suppression, adding in tamoxifen, adding in an AI, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a lot.
And those are actually accruing. The SOFT study is now a third of the way through accrual. So those are actually moving forward. We may get an answer. There's enough people who are randomizing and not just treating, which is encouraging.
That's awesome. In the beginning, I wasn't so sure. It looked like there was some inertia there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really important questions, but also in terms of, I guess, one of the biggest areas of controversies is really very similar to your patient, the perimenopausal mm-hmm. patient. Now, in this case, this woman has not had a period. She's 49, so she's a little bit younger than you might expect for natural menopause, but chemically menopausal. What did you do in her situation?
In her case, because she had been 18 months, personally, I'm very uncomfortable about using aromatase inhibitors if somebody has not been amenorrheic for at least a year. I'm comfortable when they're beyond 2 years. In between, I individualize, and she's right smack in the middle there. The thing in her situation was with her history of the thromboembolism and symptomatic ischemic events that happily didn't leave her with any permanent deficits, and her decision not to take chemotherapy. We talked about it and decided to go ahead and start her on the aromatase inhibitor, but I'm going to watch her estradiol levels closer than what I normally would, so that if it looks like the aromatase inhibitors are inducing return of ovarian function, we'll at least recognize it.
And can you talk about how that history of the TIAs relates to this decision specifically in terms of tamoxifen versus an AI?
Well, tamoxifen clearly does have a small but real increased risk of thrombosis. It's primarily on the venous side, but there is also a slight uptick on the arterial side. And in a patient who has already done that, you know, it's one of those, I don't know, there's a lot of data out there because most people, I think, do exactly what I'm doing here. They don't go there if there's an alternative. And she clearly said, no way, if she's already had a stroke, to take a drug that might increase that. So in her case, it would be, you could say, well, why don't you give her an LHRH? But the problem with her with doing that is if you start her on that, what's going to be your endpoint? When do you stop giving her these injections? How do you know they're even necessary at all? So that's the approach that we took.
Now, when we were talking before about her and chemotherapy, we didn't bring up the issue of chemotherapy in the prior TIA. Any issue there?
No, I don't think it does. And again, there, with the broadly use of chemotherapy, does seem to just have this slight risk associated with it, but it tends to be in patients who, it tends to be more venous and patients who have clearly pre-existing disease. I mean, I would tell her about that risk, were I going to use chemotherapy, had she had a high recurrence score. If you might say, well, there is this small risk, it's swamped by the benefits of the therapy. So you acknowledge it and move on like we've always done with leukemia and the cardiotoxicities.